Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. We are so pleased. The films are Mr. Jones, Sometimes, Always, Never, and Pioneers of Queer Cinema, which is not a film, is it?
Well, it's a little group of three films, but okay. We'll get to that in a few moments. Actually, a couple of our films today, the ones I'll talk about later, The Pioneers of Queer Cinema and also Mr. Jones, you know, kind of deal with issues in the public sphere that we deal with often nowadays in various ways. But the middle film, Sometimes, Always, Never, is just sort of a pure little entertainment movie. But let's begin with Mr. Jones. So this is a movie which is based on real historical events, and it all takes place quite a number of years ago, and it centers on back in the 1920s, actually. Excuse me, on 1930s, I meant to say, back in the 1930s, and it focuses on a real person whose name was Mr. Jones, in fact, Gareth Jones, and he was, back in the early 30s, a young journalist. And he, at the beginning of the movie, we find out that he has scored a real coup. He has just interviewed Adolf Hitler. And he is now back in England, which is where he works. And he is warning everybody about this Hitler fellow. All this is back around 1933. And he's saying this guy Hitler is really dangerous, and he's really going to come to power, and he's really going to do it. And people are sort of laughing him off. They don't really think that's true. In the meantime, young Gareth Jones now has a new project he wants to do. He is determined to go to the Soviet Union, still in his fairly early years, in the early 30s. And interview Joseph Stalin, the dictator there. And people are saying, oh, you'll never get to Stalin, and why bother, and don't bother to do that. But he is determined to do this. So he does. He manages to make his way to the Soviet Union, and eventually he manages to make his way to the place that he really wants to go to, which is Ukraine, then known as the Ukraine, all kinds of things transpire along the way, again, based on real-life stuff. This is all real-life material. One more thing about this movie that lends it, for me at least, a little bit of extra interest is that this is sort of a framing device where here and there in the movie, including the beginning and the end, we see the great author George Orwell, who happens to be writing Animal Farm at this time. And of course, Animal Farm is a story about barnyard animals, but it's also a very pointed and very brilliant critique of the growth of totalitarianism in the world and the evils of totalitarianism and authoritarianism and so forth. And that is really not necessary to this movie. This movie called Mr. Jones is really the story of Mr. Jones and his various adventures and what happened to him along the way. So we don't really need this George Orwell stuff, but it lends a little bit of extra resonance since most of us have forgotten or never heard of Gareth Jones, but pretty much all of us certainly know about George Orwell, and so it's kind of interesting to see him there, although it's not really necessary. And I have to say that what the movie is building up to is, again, when Mr. Jones makes it to Ukraine, and there he discovers what's going on, or rather his worst fears are confirmed, the horrible famine that was caused by Stalin's policies and that killed millions of people in the early 1930s in the Ukraine. And that is what Mr. Jones discovers. And that is what he really wants to warn the world about, not only that particular overwhelming horror, but the sorts of authoritarian evil that lead to that sort of horror and allow that sort of horror to exist in the world. So Mr. Jones, by the way, was directed by Agnieszka Holland, a very, very fine filmmaker who's been around for a lot of years and is still doing really, she's pretty old now, but she's still doing, this is a big production, and she's still doing really work, and really important work, and she's always had a very strong leaning toward movies with a powerful historical and socio-political import, and this is one of those films. So Mr. Jones is a little bit clunky, and it kind of drags in the George Orwell stuff without quite integrating it. It's not a perfect movie, but it's a very powerful movie, and it's about real historical stuff, so I recommend it very highly. Our second movie today, Sometimes, Always, Never. It is so odd the way these things happen. Just a few weeks ago, we were talking about a movie called Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. I'm not even sure I can remember the title now. But a movie with almost the same title as this one. It was Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. And that movie, that very, very excellent movie, one of the best movies so far this year, and I want to take this moment to just remind people about it if you haven't seen it. And by the way, all these films are streaming and are pretty easy to get a hold of. Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, which is the very poignant story of a young woman who needs an abortion, is an excellent, excellent film. So now, just a few weeks later, we have another movie with almost the same title. This time, it's directed by Carl Hunter, and it's called Sometimes, Always, Never, and it's a very different kind of movie. Again, that other film with this sort of title is it's a very poignant and very human drama, but it's about a very serious and sensitive topic, abortion. Sometimes, Always, Never is not such a deep film, and in fact, it's a rather light film and whimsical film, but it's a good movie, and I do recommend it. It's a nice picture. Stars Bill Nighy as an aging man, because Bill Nighy, after all, is an aging actor, and he has a son who he doesn't really get along with all that well. The son's name is Michael, and now the two of them are brought together by a family event. I won't tell what that is, although it's at the beginning of the movie, and now the two of them are sort of dealing with each other. Again, they've never really gotten along, and now they have to get along for a little while. And one of the things, well, the big thing that sort of ties the whole movie together is that the main character, his name is Alan, and his son, Michael, are both Scrabble players. And this is very much a movie about Scrabble. And in fact, that's sort of where the title comes from. And every now and again in the movie, we have these little references to Scrabble. And there are Scrabble games, and they meet other people who play Scrabble. And we discover that they take Scrabble really seriously. I mean, it's not like they're professional Scrabble players or anything like that, but they take their Scrabble pretty seriously. And so that's kind of what ties the movie together. And what we have here is a little family drama about a father and a son who don't really get along but now have to be together for a while, and we wonder if they can ever get their relationship sorted out and get back to the close kind of relationship that they had many years ago. And again, they run into other people, and there's a whole lot of Scrabble involved in it. The movie is lightly stylized, which is to say it is not, it's not any sort of hardcore realism. We're not getting gritty pictures of people. The movie is always just a tiny little bit non-realistic, and that's one of the things that lends it its interest. It's also very, very nicely acted. Bill Nighy, again, is quite a wonderful actor, always fun to watch, and he really puts himself into this role, takes it very seriously without making it heavy or weighty. Jenny Agutter, who's been around for many years now, is very fine in one of the supporting roles. Sam Riley is very fine. Alice Lowe. Anyway, a very, very nice cast, good people who really, really, really know what they're doing. And again, the movie is lightly stylized. It's not entirely realistic, and you really have to sort of be ready for that, because otherwise you might think it was a bit off-kilter, and it is actually a little bit off-kilter, but it's that way deliberately, and I very much enjoyed watching it. It's a little movie, a quiet movie, and a movie that I feel like just a sort of a little family drama with a Scrabble theme. Then this is the movie for you, Sometimes, Always, Never, and I am sure that it is going to, for years, decades, perhaps centuries to come, going to be mixed up with that other movie with almost the same title. But hey, you know, the folks who make movies ought to know what they're doing, and they were probably they're probably prepared for this confusion, which I'm sure will persist for a long time to come. Finally, Jill, I'd like to talk today about something which is not a movie, but which is a tiny little movie series or movie cluster or maybe even little film festival, which is online. A very fine company called Kino Lorber, K-I-N-O, Kino Lorber, is putting out stuff on a new service they have called Kino Marquee, which is designed for this period when most of our movie theaters are still closed. And it's one of these many platforms that have popped up or come into prominence, which have been streaming movies, very, very widely available, not hard to get a hold of. And they've put out this little series called Pioneers of Queer Cinema. And this is an interesting little thing here. Nowadays, queer issues dealing with gay people, homosexuality in all different kinds of forms, these movies are very much at issue nowadays. Yeah, not these movies, these subjects are very much at issue nowadays. We're dealing with a whole lot of social changes that have taken place in recent years with the legitimation of gay marriage and so forth. But there's still a lot of prejudice abroad in the land, and a lot of movies. You know, the movie industry has been really, the movie industry, both in the sense of big studio movies and of little independent movies, have been making up for lost time. For decades and decades and decades, mainstream film really was not allowed by the famous production code in Hollywood and other forces to deal with gay material. It was always suppressed. It could just barely peep its head above the covers. But nowadays, again, movies have been making up for lost time, and there's a tremendous amount of production going on in the areas of queer cinema of all different kinds. And one of the things that's been happening is that old movies that deal with these subjects have been resurfacing, have been brought to the fore again, and that's very much what's going on here. Because the three movies which Kino Lorber is streaming under this blanket title, Pioneers of Queer Cinema, they all date from the 1920s and 30s. So yes, queer cinema goes back for decades and decades. But these movies are not well known by most moviegoers, although most of them are very, in fact, all of them are very, very well known to people who take film seriously and who are interested in film history. But now, hey, here they are. They're streaming, and it's easy to get a hold of them. And I totally recommend checking them out. For people who do not have much familiarity with movies from the 20s and 30s, it'll be a real revelation how advanced in some ways movies of that era could be. Now, even then, movies that were designed for taking in by mass audiences could not deal with gay material very forthrightly, but it could be there. And that's very much what's going on in these movies. Now, the earliest of these three movies, made by one of the greatest filmmakers who ever lived, Carl Theodor Dreyer. He was Danish. And this movie is called Michael, and it dates from 1924. And it's the only one of these three movies that's actually a silent film. So if you're not familiar with silent movies, this film would be a nice little introduction. And it deals with a man who is an artist, and he and a model of his sort of fall in love with each other. And I say sort of because it's all sort of oblique and it's never really directly on the surface, but it's sort of unmistakable anyway. And that's the basic storyline of this movie. And it's just a visually beautiful movie. Again, being a silent movie, it tells its story almost entirely through just images, just moving pictures. But it's gorgeously photographed, beautifully directed by Dreyer, and a very sensitive little story about male love, which can never quite speak its name and which is always doomed from the start, and that makes it all the more poignant. The second movie, in terms of chronology, is from 1931, and it's a German film called Mädchen in Uniform, meaning young girls in uniform, directed by Leontine Sagan. And this is a movie about a boarding school. And it's about a young woman who goes off to an all-girls boarding school where she discovers that a lot of the girls have a total crush on one of their female teachers. And so you can see where this movie is going. And it's about a love affair between the, well, not exactly a love affair, but let's say a crush affair or a love crush between this new young student and this very glamorous teacher, Fraulein von Bemberg, in the school. And so it's a movie about first love. It's a movie about childish love going into adolescence and becoming serious love. And it's very much about gay attraction and about the way that people of the same sex can feel a very, very powerful attraction to each other, which in this girl's school is all understood by everybody because so many of the people feel the same way, but at the same time, it's frowned on, even forbidden, and so we have these tensions going on. Again, Mädchen in Uniform is a beautifully photographed movie. It's just lovely to look at. The third movie, Victor and Victoria, directed by Reinhold Schunzel back in 1933 during the Weimar Republic in Germany, is probably pretty well known because many, many years later, in fact, in the early 1980s, the great Hollywood filmmaker Blake Edwards did a remake of it with Julie Andrews and James Garner and Robert Preston called Victor Victoria. The original film, called Victor and Victoria, has basically the same story, and it's about a man who is an entertainer, a female impersonator, as they used to be called, and he can't get work, so he has to disguise him. There's a woman, I'll put it this way, there's a woman who disguises herself as a man who is a female impersonator. So it deals with a female impersonator, and it deals with a real female, and it's all totally wrapped up with the world of entertainment back in the days of Weimar Germany in the early 1930s. It's a musical, it's got songs, it's got dances, it's got comic bits, and it's also a kind of a drama, because again, it's about this sort of forbidden subject of gay love. So Pioneers of Queer Cinema is an excellent little series of three superb movies from the 1920s and 1930s, and if you're tired of the stuff that's coming out on today's screens, go back and look at these gems from bygone years. They are really, really worth catching up with. So that is my somewhat silent filmish story this week, Jill.
Thank you, as always. David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Mr. Jones, Sometimes, Always, Never, and three other films under the heading of Pioneers of Queer Cinema.